The Healer, The Healing Work of Mary Baker Eddy, compiled and arranged by David Keeston. Part 5, 8th Continuation. Number 281. Apocryphal stories abound of what Mrs. Eddy is said to have done with her body while providing such divine instruction to members of her household. To the metaphysician, they are enlightening and encouraging, but not supernatural. Nevertheless, on one occasion, some students who were holding her body, and evidently holding her to be in body, recorded that they found she could escape from their restraint and reappear instantly on the other side of the room. This is related in detail in the following account. Number 282. One day when Mrs. Eddy had dismissed Adelaide Still and asked not to be disturbed, Laura Sargent and Martha Wilcox grew concerned after quite some time had elapsed, with no word from Mrs. Eddy. After waiting longer and discussing it further, they finally decided to enter her room. They listened first at her door, but heard nothing. And when they entered, they found nothing. Mrs. Eddy was not there. Laura and Martha searched the whole house, and the entire household was alerted. Returning to Mrs. Eddy's room following some 6 or 8 hours of searching and consternation, they found her there. After calming the household, the leader asked to see Martha and Laura alone. When the others were gone and the door was closed, Mrs. Eddy said, "Girls, come here and put your arms around me." As they did so, Mrs. Eddy disappeared and was standing on the other side of the room looking at them. She then cautioned them about relating this experience to those metaphysically unprepared for it, and told them not to put it in writing. Number 283. It is important to understand the age issue in relation to Mrs. Eddy. When she was in her 70s, she looked 40 years of age. At that time, the malpractitioners were just beginning to argue old age beliefs, and it was only then that she began to show age. She said that it was a claim of animal magnetism that she had not met, not because she could not, but because she did not have sufficient time to do so with the incredible demands made upon her. Number 284. We must also remember that in our Lord's time, there was no resistance to healing. It was not until Mrs. Eddy discovered Christian Science and showed us how to heal that mortal mind perverted this and started mental malpractice and all forms of resistance. Our Lord did not have to deal with the full intensity of this error, nor with organized medical belief. Mrs. Eddy said, "The burden is light, the yoke is easy, and if I can say that, any mortal can. For never mortal before drank my cup." One's demonstration is determined by the resistance he must overcome. Number 285. Her church was organized under the divinely inspired government of the church bylaws established by her in the manual of the Mother Church. Only in this way could she leave a legacy that would not be subject to the wayward influences of ego and love of position and power. Mrs. Eddy's church had a board of 4 directors, and for a time, a temporary board of 5 directors. 3 of the 5 members of this male element constituting the board at the time of her passing had conspired to wrest control of her church from her. They thought that they were far more capable to run the church and the burgeoning Christian Science movement than a little gray-haired old lady. Their disloyalty and lack of spiritual demeanor were indicative of why God always inspired her in taking whatever steps were necessary to preserve the integrity of what she had founded for the future benefit of mankind in the affairs of her church. General Frank S. Streeter, who was one of the ablest lawyers in New England, perhaps even in the United States, once asserted, according to his son's testimony, that Mrs. Eddy knew more law than he did. Most probably, Mrs. Eddy would have said that it was God who knew all law, and it was He that told her what to do. But some of her Boston officials felt that they knew better. A good deal of mental murder was going on among her directors and other officers by the last quarter of 1910. That is, they were thinking and discussing their belief that Mrs. Eddy will pass away before long. Some of them were also discussing how the organization would function without her controlling hand. Archibald McClellan was the lawyer on the board of directors, and perhaps the one most concerned about some of the bylaws in the manual. He was well aware, as he had once told Mr. William Dana Orcutt, that Mrs. Eddy has left us nothing to conceive or originate, simply to carry on and to execute. There were even a number of things which they could not carry on if they adhered to the bylaws in the manual, because Mrs. Eddy's approval was required, often in writing. So a campaign began to induce Mrs. Eddy to change some of the bylaws that restricted the directors. Adelaide Still was present on one occasion when one of the directors, probably Mr. McClellan, tried to get Mrs. Eddy to remove these restrictions from the manual. But she refused. It may have been after this interview that she said to Mr. Dickey, in a voice filled with earnestness and pathos, that if she could find one individual who was spiritually equipped, she would place him at the head of her church government. After she had said this, she asked Mr. Dickey to take a pencil, and then dictated very slowly so that he would not miss one word. "I prayed God day and night to show me how to form my church and how to go on with it. I understand that He showed me, just as I understand, he showed me Christian Science. And no human being ever showed me Christian Science. Then I have no right or desire to change what God had directed me to do, and it remains for the church to obey it. What has prospered this church for 30 years will continue to keep it. While Mrs. Eddy was talking with Adam Dickey, Mr. McClellan was explaining the dilemma he foresaw to William Rathvon. Number 286. Rathvon and McClellan conspired with Clifford P. Smith, then first reader of the Mother Church, in a plan to tell Mrs. Eddy that they would commit her to an asylum if she did not sign their proposed new bylaw, establishing them as an executive committee over the board of directors, replacing Mrs. Eddy, giving them authority to supervise the board of directors, and to make or change any bylaws. They attempted to recruit Judge Septimus Hanna in their plan to usurp Mrs. Eddy's leadership. He told them that they were to go to her and immediately confess their plan and their disloyalty to her, and if they didn't, he would. They refused, claiming that they had progressed too far to turn back now. Judge Hanna told Mrs. Eddy. Shortly after, she told her faithful student, Ira O. Knapp, one of the directors at the time. He passed on. Mr. Knapp said he has a photostat of a letter Mr. Fry wrote and that Mrs. Eddy signed, where she said a cabal was formed, a triumvirate, to get themselves put above the directors by having a change made in the manual, and thus to nullify the manual. Mrs. Eddy evidently was not certain she could defeat their purposes. However, there was one way she could defeat them, and that was by allowing herself to pass on. Then the manual could not be changed. She chose this course, and chose her own time to go. Thus she gave her life for the manual and her church, as Jesus gave his life to show the way and reveal the Christ. There are indications that she knew as early as 3 years before her passing when she would be delivered up, necessitating the protective measures in the manual. On March 10, 1907, she made the following statement to a student in her home. Divinity Course and General Collectania, Richard Oakes, page 23 and 24. From the beginning and all the way along, I got my leading from God through the Bible. Right in the beginning I got, write it in a book, and it shall be for all time. Today he is speaking to me again. Isaiah 16, verse 14. But now the Lord hath spoken, saying, within 3 years, as the years of an hireling, and the glory of Moab shall be contemned, with all that great multitude, and the remnant shall be very small and feeble. I am sure this will be fulfilled, but don't tell anyone about it. She knew in 1907 that she had 3 years to finish her work. She told more than one person that if she passed on, it would be due to animal magnetism. If she ascended, and only a few in her household knew it or perceived it, outsiders would assume that they had hidden her body, and the situation would become intolerable. She once said that she thought if Jesus was here now, with the type of thinking present now, if he arose now after death, probably no one would have been able to perceive him. Number 287. While still at Pleasant View, her loved home, she said to Henrietta Chanfrau, "Henrietta, if I ever go away from here to another house, it will be to be delivered up to my enemies." How true this prophetic statement proved to be. In fact, in 1903, she had said to her students, "It was not the material cross that killed Jesus, but it was the desertion of his students that killed him." Several days before she left us, she dictated to her trusted student, Laura Sargent, "It took a combination of sinners that was fast to harm me," and signed it in her own hand. See Doris Greckel's The Forever Leader, page 583 to 584. From Luke, "But behold, the hand of him that betrayeth me is with me on the table. And truly the Son of Man goeth, as it was determined. But woe unto that man by whom he is betrayed." And they began to inquire among themselves which of them it was that should do this thing. And there was also a strife among them, which of them should be accounted the greatest. And he said unto them, "The kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and they that exercise authority upon them are called benefactors. But ye shall not be so, but he that is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he that is chief, as he that doth serve. For whether is greater, he that sitteth at meat, or he that serveth? Is not he that sitteth at meat? But I am among you as he that serveth." The directors altered her manual within days prior to her passing, illegally, without her consent, although purporting all the while the changes had been authorized by Mrs. Eddy. Mrs. Eddy always made changes in her own handwriting when it concerned her own writings. Ira O. Knapp passed on 3 weeks before Mrs. Eddy did. Bliss Knapp, Ira Knapp's son, asked Adam Dickey if Mrs. Eddy said anything about his father's passing. Mr. Dickey said he told her there was a vacancy on the board. She didn't ask who it was. Evidently, she knew. She then offered the position to Calvin Fry. He declined. She then offered it to Adam Dickey. He accepted. As both Calvin and Adam were her secretaries, she would not have appointed them if she had intended to stay here on this mortal plane. On the Sunday before her passing, at the song service in her home, she said to continue to hold the service, even though I will not be with you. She passed on the following Saturday night. They had thought that she meant she would stay in her room. From Miscellaneous Writings. Certain students, being too much interested in themselves to think of helping others go their way, they do not love Mother, but pretend to. They constantly go to her for help, interrupt the home harmony, criticize and disobey her, then return to their vomit, world worship, pleasure seeking, and sense indulgence. Meantime, declaring they never disobey Mother. It exceeds my conception of human nature. Sin in its very nature is marvelous. Who but a moral idiot, sanguine of success in sin, can steal and lie and lie and lead the innocent to doom? History needs it, and it has the grandeur of the loyal, self-forgetful, faithful Christian Scientists to overbalance this foul stuff. When the mother's love can no longer promote peace in the family, wisdom is not justified of her children. When depraved reason is preferred to revelation, error to truth, and evil to good, and sense seems sounder than soul, the children are tending the regulator. They are indeed losing the knowledge of the divine principle and rules of Christian Science, whose fruits prove the nature of their source. A little more grace, a motive made pure, a few truths tenderly told, a heart softened, a character subdued, a life consecrated, would restore the right action of the mental mechanism and make manifest the movement of body and soul in accord with God. Mrs. Eddy was alert to the methods of how the devil would use her students to resist her inspired guidance. She would occasionally alert a student to how these attempts would take place, or attempt to destroy her church. Fully 2 years before the above took place, she knew the danger that lay before her. From Memoirs of Mary Baker Eddy, Adam H. Dickey. On Tuesday, August 25th, 1908, my bell rang, calling me to Mrs. Eddy's apartment. When I entered her study, she was lying on the lounge where she usually took her rest. Requesting Mrs. Sargent, Mr. Fry, and a third student to leave the room, she beckoned me to approach. She extended her hand to me, took mine in both of hers, and asked in a deep, earnest voice, "Mr. Dickey, I want you to promise something. Will you?" I said, "Yes, Mother, I certainly will." "If I should ever leave here," she repeated, "will you promise me that you will write a history of what has transpired in your experiences with me, and say that I was mentally murdered?" I answered, "Yes, Mother, I will." "Now, Mr. Dickey, do not let anything interfere with you keeping this promise. Will you swear to me before God that you will not fail to carry out my wish. I raised my right hand and said, Mother, I swear before God that I will do what you request of me, namely, write a history of what I have seen and heard from your lips concerning your life. That will do, dear. I know now that you will not fail me. Her whole demeanor was one of solemn intensity, and there was an eagerness in her voice and manner such as I seldom saw. I returned to my room and pondered deeply over what she had said. In a few minutes, one of the workers and Mrs. Sargent brought me a sealed envelope. In it was a penciled note reiterating the statement that she had made in our conversation of a short time before. Number 288. 2 days before her passing, Thursday, December 1st, 1910, an interesting scene took place. Mrs. Eddy's helpers thought she was suffering from a cold. When it came time for her drive, they said to her, "Don't you think it would be wise, Mother, to stay at home today?" Mrs. Eddy answered as she had for many years when her students voiced the lying suggestion instead of the scientific reality of being, "That's right, talk with the devil." Mrs. Sargent opened her Bible, and after silently reading the passage she had opened to, she thought, "I wish I might ask Mother what this means." As Mrs. Eddy was arranging her bonnet, she said, "Laura, do not bring your questions to me. Take them to God. You lose your answer if you take them to me." Laura Sargent accompanied her on her drive that day and recorded one of the leader's last messages for her followers. During the drive, Mrs. Eddy appeared to be thinking deeply and said aloud, "Oh, if the students had only done what I had told them to do, I should live and carry on the cause." When they returned from the drive, Mrs. Eddy appeared very weak to those in her household. She asked for a pad, which Ella Rathvon brought to her, and on it she wrote her last written message, "God is my life." Number 289. The Great Pyramid in Egypt has been called the Bible in Stone. Mrs. Eddy referred in Christian Healing to the Great Pyramid of Egypt, a miracle in stone. She also left a pamphlet on her desk on December 3, 1910, which was entitled The Latter Days with Evidence from the Great Pyramid. She left this pamphlet open on her desk the day of her passing. It was open to page 32. The passage marked on page 32 read, "By the same standard of interpretation, the termination of the Grand Gallery, 1,910 inches, gives the 3rd of December, 1910, the day of her passing, as the end of the present era, which we accept as an approximation only, though possibly a very close one." 4 centuries, Bible scholars and historians have agreed that the Great Pyramid contains an historical and prophetic roadmap, confirming many waymarks in Bible history and prophecy. Number 290. The message I'm about to impart is not only an important message for all Christian scientists, but in my estimation, it is the most important incident in Mrs. Eddy's experience, which proves without any doubt the infallibility of her complete demonstration of the revelation of Christian science. 25 years ago, I had the privilege of visiting all of the historical landmarks pertaining to Mrs. Eddy's revelation of Christian science. Our last stop of this tour was Mrs. Eddy's bedroom. This room was homespun and expressed simplicity. I was impressed to see several pictures of Jesus hanging on the walls. It was at this moment that my guide turned to me and said that she felt impelled to tell me what happened to Mrs. Eddy on December 3, 1910, the day of her passing. She went to the door of the bedroom to see if we were alone, and then proceeded to tell me the following incident, which was told to her by Miss Adelaide Still, one of three persons watching with Mrs. Eddy in the final hours of her human experience. She told me that Miss Still had requested her not to repeat what she was about to tell me, because she had promised those in authority at the Boston headquarters of the Christian Science Church never to speak of this experience to anyone. I can assure you that by this time I was not only awed, but more than moved by what she was relating. On the night Mrs. Eddy passed, her three valued and beloved workers were with her. They were Miss Adelaide Still, Mrs. Laura Sargent, and Mr. Calvin Fry. On this eventful day in December 1910, the furnace had ceased to function, and a repairman had been summoned to fix it. When he arrived, Mr. Fry and Mrs. Sargent went downstairs to the first floor to admit the repairman. Mr. Fry accompanied him to the basement, while Mrs. Sargent waited in the front hall. Miss Still was left sitting by Mrs. Eddy's bed. In a short while, the furnace was in working order, and Mr. Fry and Mrs. Sargent hurried to the second floor to return to their post by Mrs. Eddy's side. As they neared the bedroom, they noticed that Miss Still was standing in the doorway. Approaching her side, they looked into the bedroom and beheld Mrs. Eddy by the side of the bed, smiling at them. Then Mrs. Eddy turned and pointed to the bed, where they saw the form of the one they had called Mother. As their gaze turned again to Mrs. Eddy, she was shaking her head back and forth, as if to say, "I am not there. I have risen." Then, as these three watched, the vision of their beloved leader gradually faded from their sight. At that moment, as I stood there looking into Mrs. Eddy's bedroom, I felt a wave of insight into the magnitude of Mrs. Eddy's mission I had never felt before. They had witnessed the ascension of their leader. Before we returned to the entrance hall on the main floor, my guide, who had told me her name, which I have forgotten, expressed the importance of what she had related to me. She repeated that she felt impelled to tell me this incident, which she had heard from the lips of Adelaide Still, who was her sister. Number 291. Prior to Mrs. Eddy leaving this experience, recorded in January 1896, she explained to Calvin Fry that while David died and was buried, and Jesus died, but his body was raised again, the demonstration for her would not be in death even, but a body transformed by the renewing of mind. Mind with a capital M is one of the synonyms for God. See page 587, Science and Health. From Matthew. And the angel answered and said unto the women, Fear not ye, for I know that ye seek Jesus, which was crucified. He is not here, for he is risen, as he said. Come, see the place where the Lord lay, and go quickly and tell his disciples that he is risen from the dead, and behold, he goeth before you into Galilee. There shall ye see him. Lo, I have told you. Number 292. It was the third day after Mrs. Eddy's passing. In the room with the body, which lay on the bed, were Mrs. Elizabeth Norton and a Miss Grace Collins. In the room next to them were Mr. Fry and two of the directors of the Mother Church. There was a great noise, almost like an explosion. The directors went to investigate. They went through the house and to the cellar and could find no cause for or results of the detonation. Immediately following this noise, Mrs. Eddy appeared to Mrs. Norton and Miss Collins. She walked across the room and disappeared through the wall. She appeared as a youth, dark hair and most radiant. Mrs. Norton turned to Miss Collins and said, Grace, did you see what I saw? Grace said, yes. Mrs. Norton told the directors what they had seen, and the directors said, it must not be told yet. From Matthew. Jesus, when he had cried again with a loud voice, yielded up the ghost. And behold, the veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom, and the earth did quake, and the rocks rent. Number 293. Prior to her passing, Mrs. Eddy had stated to a student that it was not old age that was affecting her, but rather a peculiar form of malicious animal magnetism that she had not been able to overcome. This was confirmed in an unsolicited report from the undertakers who were called to Mrs. Eddy's home. From Frank S. Waterman, George A. Pierce, and Catherine M. Foote. December 6, 1910. To whom it may concern. We were called to the residence of Mrs. Mary Baker Eddy in Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts, at 8:15 a.m., Sunday, December 4, 1910, to care for her body. We found it in an excellent state of preservation when first called. and also 58 hours after death. No preserving compounds were used until that time. The tissues were remarkably normal. The skin was well preserved, soft, pliable, smooth, and healthy. I do not remember having found the body of a person of such advanced age in so good a physical condition. The walls of the arteries were unusually firm, and in as healthy a state as might be expected in the body of a young person. The usual accompaniments of age were lacking, and no outward appearance of any disease, no lesion, or other conditions common to one having died at such an advanced age were noticeable. In the process of embalming, we found the body at 60 hours after death in as good condition of preservation as we always find at 12 to 24 hours after death. This is our voluntary statement, made without solicitation or influence of any kind. Number 294. January 26, 1911, marked the date that Mrs. Eddy was to be interred in Auburn Cemetery, Boston, Massachusetts. For this occasion, those in attendance, all men, had been issued tickets. It was a cold, gray, and drizzling day, not a fit place for a woman. Yet, in the procession, there was an unidentified woman. Who could she be? It was later presumed to be the funeral director, but she later denied she was at Mount Auburn. From Mark. And entering into the sepulchre, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment, and they were affrighted. And he saith unto them, Be not affrighted, ye seek Jesus of Nazareth, which was crucified. He is risen, he is not here. Behold the place where they laid him. But go your way, tell his disciples and Peter, that he goeth before you into Galilee. There shall you see him, as he said unto you. And they went out quickly, and fled from the sepulchre, for they trembled and were amazed. Neither said they anything to any man, for they were afraid. Bliss Knapp was one of the pall bearers. He said it did not feel as if there was any body in the casket.